Hello, everyone, and welcome to 257 of the Fun with Cars Formula One podcast. I'm Robin Warner, and yes, it is actually happening. We are recording. And today, I am joined by the man some call Mr. Rugby, Chris Rose. Chris, what is a rugby? Is that like in between a rug and a carpet, or is it like a throwdown mat in front of your door? What is a rugby?
It's a school in England, actually.
Is it now?
And a professional sport in some countries outside the US.
What professional sport involves carpet? I'm confused.
It's a good question. But the sport that's the most equivalent here, that it's called football. Do people use their feet much in that game?
Oh, yeah, all the time. It's very important.
To stand up, to stay vertical.
Yeah, exactly. You stand, okay. You run, you do a lot of things.
All right.
Plus, in football, the shape of the ball is somewhat like a foot, like a very swollen foot with four amputated toes.
All right.
Yeah, and a pretty bad case of gout.
I'll take your word for that one.
Anyway, today we are going to talk about the Belgian, Italian, Singapore, and Russian Grand Prix, which were the 13th through the 16th rounds of the Formula One Championship. However, we are not going to go race by race. This is what happened to this race. This is what happened to that race. That would be a bit foolish, seeing how lots and lots has happened. But I am going to quickly run through the results of the four races, and that Chris and I are going to go over the highlights of, I guess the best way to say it, is the month of September. So
just a quick question before you start that. Is there any link between the fact that we haven't recorded for four races and the fact that Ferrari have been resurgent? Are you like an anti-Ferrari individual?
No, well, that's the irony. I mean, I would say that I'm quite keen on Ferrari, but I will say more so the road cars than the race cars. The irony is not lost on me, though, that Ferrari did seem to gain a bit of pace all of a sudden. The real question will be, now that we are recording again, what is going to happen in Japan? But that, alas, is the future, because today is Wednesday evening, October 2nd, and here are the results of all the Grand Prix. Okay, and I'm going to do this fast. Okay, in Belgium, the winner was Charles Leclerc in the lead Ferrari. That's right, Charles Leclerc finally got a win. It was, however, definitely not quite as inspiring and exciting an occasion as it normally would be because of the tragic loss of the F2 driver. In second place was Lewis Hamilton in the lead Mercedes, followed by his teammate Valtteri Bottas in the second Mercedes. Sebastian Vettel was fourth in the second Ferrari. The lead Red Bull Racing Honda, Alex Albon, was fifth. Sergio Perez was sixth in the lead Racing Point Mercedes. Seventh place went to Daniel Kvyat in the lead Scuderia Toro Rosso. Eighth place, Nico Hülkenberg in the lead Renault. Ninth place went to Pierre Gasly in the second Toro Rosso Honda. Tenth place, Lance Stroll in the second Racing Point Mercedes. 11th place, the lead McLaren, Lando Norris. 12th place, Kevin Magnussen in the Haas Ferrari. Lead Haas Ferrari, followed by his teammate, Romain Grosjean. And 13th, 14th place went to Daniel Ricciardo in the second Renault. 15th place, George Russell in the lead Williams Mercedes. 16th place in the lead Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari, Kimi Raikkonen. 17th place was Robert Kubica in the second Williams. And 18th place was Antonio Giovinazzi in the second Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. And Carlos Sainz in the second McLaren Renault and Max Verstappen in the second Red Bull Racing Honda were not classified. That was Belgium. That was Spa. In Italy, it was Charles Leclerc getting his second win and his second win and his first win that was full of elation, and it was at none other than Monza. So he won in a Ferrari in Monza. That was epic. He was one. He was in the course of the lead Ferrari. Second place went to Valtteri Bottas in the lead Mercedes. Third place, Lewis Hamilton in the second Mercedes. Fourth place, Daniel Ricciardo in the lead Renault. Quite impressive. Fifth place, Nico Hülkenberg in the second Renault. Fantastic result for Renault. Sixth place went to Alexander Albon in the lead Racing Point Red Bull Racing Honda. Seventh place, Sergio Perez in the lead Racing Point Mercedes. 8th place, Max Verstappen in the 2nd Red Bull Racing Honda. 9th place, Antonio Giovinazzi in the lead Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. I guess that's the other Italian team of sorts. 10th place went to Lando Norris in a lead McLaren Renault. 11th place went to Pierre Gasly in the second Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. 12th place in the second Racing Point Mercedes was Lance Stroll. 13th place was Sebastian Vettel in the Ferrari. Oh, yeah, that was a fun result. 14th place, George Russell in the lead Williams Mercedes. 15th place, Kimi Raikkonen in the second Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. 16th place, the lead Haas Ferrari, Romain Grosjean. 17th place, the second Williams Mercedes, Robert Kubica, and then not classified, Kevin Magnussen in the second Haas Ferrari, Daniel Kvyat in the second Scuderia Toro Rosso, and Carlos Sainz in the second McLaren Renault. Okay, two down, two to go. In Singapore, it was, what? Sebastian Vettel in the lead Ferrari. He was followed by his teammate, Charles Leclerc, in the second Ferrari. Third place went to Max Verstappen in the lead Red Bull Racing Honda. Fourth place, the lead Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton, followed by his teammate, Valtteri Bottas, in fifth place. Sixth place went to Alexander Albon in the second Red Bull Racing Honda. Seventh place, Lando Norris, he's doing quite well, in the lead McLaren Renault. Eighth place went to Pierre Gasly in the lead Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. Ninth place, oh boy, was it? Yeah. Ninth place was the lead Renault of Nico Hülkenberg. 10th place, Antonio Giovinazzi in the lead Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. 11th place, Romain Grosjean in the lead Haas Ferrari. Hey, he finished. 12th place went to Carlos Sainz in the second McLaren Renault. 13th place, Lance Stroll in the lead Racing Point Mercedes. 14th place went to Dan Ricciardo in the second Renault. 15th place, Daniel Kvyat in the second Toro Rosso Honda. 16th place, Robert Kubica in the lead Williams Mercedes. 17th place, Kevin Magnussen in the second, no, yes, second Haas Ferrari. And 18, 19, 20, not classified, Kimi Raikkonen in the Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. Sergio Perez in the second Racing Point Mercedes. And George Russell in the second Williams Mercedes. We are almost done. In Russia, it was Lewis Hamilton in the lead Mercedes, winning once again and getting, kind of close to that sixth championship. He was followed by his teammate yet again, Valtteri Bottas in the second Mercedes. Third place went to Charles Leclerc in the lead Ferrari. 14th place went to Max Verstappen in the lead Red Bull Racing Honda, followed by his teammate Alexander Albon in the second Red Bull Racing Honda. Sixth place went to Carlos Sainz in the lead McLaren Renault. Seventh place, Sergio Perez in the lead Racing Point Mercedes. 8th place in the 2nd McLaren, Lando Norris. 9th place, Kevin Magnussen in the lead Haas Ferrari. 10th place, Nico Hülkenberg in the lead Renault. 11th place, it was Lance Stroll in the 2nd Racing Point Mercedes. 12th place, or was that the 1st? Yeah, no, 2nd. 12th place, Danny Kvyat in the lead Scuderia Toro Rosso Honda. 13th place, Kimi Raikkonen in the lead Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. 14th place, Pierre Gasly. That's right, you owe me a bottle of gin. In the second Scuderia Racing Honda. 15th place, Antonio Giovinazzi in the second Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari. And then the rest were not classified. And it's such a shame why. Robert Kubica in the Williams Mercedes, George Russell in the second Williams Mercedes, Sebastian Vettel in the second Ferrari, Daniel Ricciardo in the second Renault, and Romain Grosjean in a place that he seems more comfortable in the second Haas Ferrari. Okay. That is all four races. Chris Roche, what were the highlights? What's the biggest highlight of the month of September?
Well, it has to be Ferrari. I mean, where did they go on vacation? Because they were looking pretty rough, even in Hungary. And then all of a sudden they come back off holiday and start winning. I mean, they really should have won all four races. They let Russia slip through their fingers. With an unlucky safety car caused by themselves. But, I think we all expected them to be strong in Monza and Spa because those are power tracks and Ferrari clearly have the best power unit at the moment. But no one was expecting Singapore where, they were very, very clever in Singapore, I thought. Leclerc qualified on pole and then they worked hard together between him and his teammate to have the right strategy to keep the lead position even through the pit stop cycling. So it's been a crazy change of form. We all have thought they'd be strong this season. They didn't do anything until now. So maybe bodes well for a 2020 title run for Leclerc.
Well, look at you going. I see another bottle of gin coming my way if I want to bet against that. Yeah, it's kind of remarkable, the change in fortunes that happened. Just as you said, We were expecting Ferrari to be stronger at Spa and Monza. Certainly, they have a strong power unit, almost as good as Honda's. But Singapore was the real surprise. I don't think anyone expected Ferrari to be as strong as they were there.
I mean, I think Mercedes were struggling on over one lap, right? So Hamilton didn't really do as good a qualifying performance this year as he did last. And that just opened the door. But I really thought Mercedes dropped the ball. They still have one key advantage over the rest of the teams, particularly Ferrari, is that their tire deck is much better. So they can keep their tires fresh for much longer. Bless you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And so having qualified second, they then allowed Leclerc to control the pace and ran Hamilton long on a track where you really can't overtake. I mean, I think Christian Horner mentioned during the race that you need more than a two-second delta to be able to pass someone. And he never looked like making ground from his post-pit position of fourth. Never looked like making a pass. Never even looked like lining one up. So what I was shocked about was the undercut was the way to go, as Vettel proved, right? He leapt from third to first.
Yeah.
So why didn't Hamilton just pit first? He would have won the race.
Yeah.
Even if he'd pitted when Vettel did, or the same lap, or the lap after, he would have won the race, or been certainly second, if not first. So it was a real drop ball, I thought, by Mercedes there. But other than that, Ferrari outwitted them and deserved the win. So.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of fan excitement, in terms of quality of the races, you and I had a lot of discussion the earlier part of the year, and it gets to just what you were talking about, like having to have that two-second delta for passing. It just the struggle of passing in general and all these things. How exciting were these races for you to watch during the month of September and, you know, Belgium through Russia?
Well, I think they all had their moments, right? I mean, Belgium was a pretty good race in the sense that you had Hamilton closing Leclerc down at the end of the race. It looked like maybe with another couple of laps, he would have had a real chance of an overtake. So, I mean, that was quite interesting. And I think we were all quite excited to see Charles get his first win. That's always a nice moment, right? And then there was a lot going on that weekend, as you mentioned, with the Hubert F2 tragedy. So, I mean, that was... but Spa's always a... Yeah, it's one of the greatest tracks ever, right? So it's always worth watching. But then, I mean, Monza was a great race. I mean, the battle between Leclerc and Hamilton was very interesting. We had the return of the warning flag, which hadn't been used for some time. The FIA found it in a closet somewhere and decided to use that. Leclerc's defence of the lead was quite robust, you could say. And I thought it was quite interesting in that race in particular how you could see that Mercedes, there's no title battle going on between Hamilton and Bottas. They worked as a team, right? And Hamilton was quite happy to pit and concede the second place to Bottas, which you normally don't do to your nearest title rival. But then, he was repaid in Singapore when Bottas returned the favour. So I think that the Drivers' Championship's done, to be honest. Unless Leclerc can win the remaining five races and Hamilton has five DNFs, I think it's all over. But that was slightly interesting. Now, Singapore was dull. I completely agree. It was a pretty dull race. And Russia was okay. Russia, I would say, was an average race. So, mixed.
Now, it's fascinating to me. Russia, to me, was actually quite compelling just because of, the first half of the race anyway, because of the tension that Ferrari brought with this whole random team orders thing. I mean, that was so fascinating to me that there were like pre-described team orders. Leclerc was going to let Vettel slingshot past, but then Vettel was going to give up the position a couple laps later. And I think the strategy behind that was it was going to allow the Ferrari team to get ahead of the Mercedes team, get out of the DRS range, and then go back to their original order. But which became no surprise to me at all, it ended up causing a tension, a rivalry between the two. because Vettel's like, no, the slipstream didn't help me at all, and I'm going faster than Leclerc is anyway. So even though there wasn't any strict passing going on for the lead, it was extremely fascinating to me what was going down. And I thought it showed Ferrari has certainly gained a lot in performance since the summer break, but there's still a lot of team structure that still seems extremely troubling, you know?
Well, I mean, so Vettel was under quite a lot of pressure, right? Singapore was his first win in over a year. Charles, of course, has now got four pole positions in a row, which is the first time a Ferrari driver has managed to do that since Schumacher.
Right.
So Vettel's in a corner. He's trying to fight his, for his place in that team. And you know, there's some history here, right? I mean, Monza was a farce. Those two were supposed to tow each other around. And that led to a lot of bad feeling because Seb never got a second run because of the farce going on with everyone tripping over each other not to lead into the final quali run, which was pretty hysterical.
Yes.
And so most of them actually didn't do a second run. And then Seb has form in this. Anyone who's been watching Formula One for more than 10 minutes knows that as soon as he gets a chance, he gets his elbows out and looks after number one. He did that against Mark Webber.
Yep, multi-21.
The
infamous multi-21.
And he's not, old habits die hard, as they say. So, Charles, I think, is trying to still, play the role of, well, I'm the newbie in the team. I'm not going to try to upset the apple cart. I'm going to let my driving do the talking. But, yeah, he's going to get screwed over if he's not careful.
It seems to be in a weird place where Charles is still trying to be the team player, but increasingly with less patience. And he's also young yet, you can tell he's still charged up and still extremely eager. And that's not a recipe for success. You know what I mean? Well, let me take that back. That can be a recipe for success, but it can be dangerous as well. It can cloud your judgment in critical moments.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely proven that he's a top line driver, and certainly a good decision for Ferrari to promote him for this season, especially as Vettel continues to make pretty rookie errors, with the Monza spin in particular standing out for me, which was quite a good chuckle moment.
Yeah. So I didn't even get to watch thoroughly Spa or Singapore, but to me, what I've seen in the results and the pace of the cars is that Ferrari has what seems like the car to beat now, but Mercedes still has a much better team structure. And they're winning strategically or tactically even as often as they're winning with sheer performance.
So I think two things have changed the order. One is Mercedes' upgraded engine had some serious reliability issues. I mean, they've had multiple blow-ups. One hit Perez in Spa. They had another one or two blow-up subsequently. So they've had to detune the performance of that upgraded engine, which probably resulted in a big delta to Ferrari's upgrade, which has been much more successful and reliable up until Russia. Now, whether or not Ferrari have to turn it down a little bit, depending on what they find went wrong with Seb's car in Russia, it will be interesting to see in the next races. But the other thing is, I think Mercedes have just stopped developing their car. They're already working on next season's car. So while Ferrari are flat out trying to figure out why this car didn't work and trying to get some performance out of it, Mercedes have already moved on. And there's an interesting article in Motorsport magazine where basically the teams are trying to split their time between continuous development of this year's car, then also, starting to think about next year's, plus having some resources devoted to the 21 regs when,
right.
Obviously there's a big, big shift. So it makes sense to start investigating that sooner rather than later. So if you already... I'm using it. Sorry, buddy. So if you're already, 150 points ahead in the championship, I think they're Yeah, 571 to 409. So, you know, 162 points ahead. You can afford to stop developing your car, really, and continue to pick up the odd win or the second places or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fantastic place to be, right? But what did you think of the failure that Vettel had in Russia? MGUK.
Okay. I mean, you know, there's a lot of speculation about what Ferrari have found. I mean, it's an amazing jump in performance. I mean, how many years are we into the hybrid system rules now? What is it, 6 years? And somehow they've managed to get 30, 40 horsepower on Mercedes, which is really quite shocking.
Yeah.
So I don't know where, nobody quite knows where they've eked it out. It's benefiting all their teams. I haven't really read too much about what they actually said about that failure, or whether it gives away any clue as to what performance they managed to find from the power unit. But it's, it went, I don't know how many engines he's run or how many PUs he's run, since he's had a new one installed, but that's worth investigating.
So here's what I noticed. It seemed like Vettel turned a corner in Germany earlier this year, where he had that second place finish in a really chaotic wet dry race and seemed to be getting his bearings again. And then Hungary went fine. It was fine, you know. And then...
Is that code for slow?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it wasn't remarkable, right?
Okay.
And then Spa happened. Seemed like, you know, it was fine again. Where, I mean, he was ahead of most people, except for his teammate and Mercedes. You know, it was only so-so, right? But then Italy was just this awful, awful result again, with the two of them, you know, with Vettel and Hamilton racing each other in bizarre ways. But then he wins Singapore. So he's been all over the place, and he won Singapore and he was leading Russia before that failure happened. So where would you place Vettel in terms of his driving? Because, by the way, I'll mention this now, he's now fifth in the Drivers' Championship. Fifth.
Yeah, he's almost eliminated from the title challenge, right? I think he's like a couple of points mathematically still in the hunt.
No, he's out of the driver's title.
No, I think there's 130 points left, right?
120. Well, all right.
Yeah,
if you include fastest laps, yeah. Because he's 128 points behind Hamilton right now.
Yeah. Hey, shout out for Magnussen, who got the fastest lap in Singapore, by the way. Anyway, I think there were some theories that Vettel's race got compromised in Belgium to help Leclerc, because I think they felt they had to work as a team to beat Hamilton. So you can give him a pass on that one. I think the bigger concern for him is his outright pace. I mean, Leclerc has been embarrassing him. I can't remember all of the differentials for the last four races, but there's been some pretty sizable deltas, like 3, 4, 5 tenths of a second between them.
Jeez,
And that's where, you know, he's always been quick. I mean, I know Daniel got the better of him when they were at Red Bull together, but generally his one lap pace has been his major strength, whereas his racecraft has been sort of a weaker aspect. But now it looks like, you know, Leclerc's got on top of the Ferrari better than he has been able to with whatever they're doing to unleash the pace on the tyres. So, yeah, that's the biggest worry for me, is that you can't continue to be blown away like that and keep your seat.
Yeah, it's amazing to be having this conversation because, you know, Vettel is what, 30, 31, something like that. And he's four-time champion, and now we're talking about him keeping his seat or not. And that's with the fact that he's won a race this season.
Yeah, that's right. And I think Binotto has been pretty supportive, and I think Ferrari are trying to help him out a little bit and get his confidence back. I think they recognize that you know, they've got a strong pairing. You've got youth and experience there, right? So normally that's a pretty good combination, and they've already come out and said that he'll be driving for next season. So I think it's more likely than not that he will still be there next year. But you've got to worry about him for contract renewal time for 21, I think, is where I'd be concerned.
Well, where do you think his head's at? This is the real question. Where do you think his head's at with losing lead driver status? Because that, you know, staying with Ferrari, that's one thing. But is he going to become Felipe Massa? Is he going to have to step aside for Leclerc more and more?
I mean, I don't think you could say, is he going to become Felipe Massa? I think you could say, is he going to become Kimi Raikkonen, which, you know, is more befitting, I think, you know.
Whatever. Kimi, sure, is fine.
He's the world champion. But, I think he's a very proud man, right?
To be fair, Felipe Massa was world champion for about 25 seconds. So...
His poor dad. Did you see that?
Oh yeah.
Terrible. But I can't see him going for that. I can't see him wanting to be, you know, the support for somebody else. I think he'll either quit or he'll take on another project, right? Whether it's another team, and try to be the lead driver somewhere else, or do an Alonso and go race in another category. I think, you know, what I'm hearing from some of the reports is that he still loves his motorsport, and I don't think he's claiming he's not feeling the same level of pressure as the press are trying to have us believe. But yeah, it's got to be a tough spot, and you know, he may find a way to turn it around before the end of the year. I don't think Charles's run is going to continue indefinitely. He's been hit or miss a little bit already this year, and it wouldn't surprise
definitely
me.
So.
Yeah, so it could still turn around before the end of the season, and you know, next year's car may suit him better. So. Long way to go. I think it's certainly a fascinating. This you know, it's a fascinating story, and there's a long way for it to go.
Well, I do think what I've been finding really fascinating. I mean, maybe it's a sign of my age, or it's just the way it is that Formula One has remained quite interesting race to race. Less so from the on-track action specifically, but just there's been genuine, palpable tension across the teams. And I've found that really fascinating. And for a little while, there was a lot of will he stay, will he go with Valtteri Bottas. It seemed like he was kind of close to the edge of losing his seat. And he only got a one-year extension, so it's not like it's rock solid for him. But, you know, it's... He got the extension, and he seems to be proving that that was a good choice for Mercedes since that was decided. To counteract that, you have that tension with Ferrari that I found really fascinating. And then there's these other things going on with Gasly losing his spot and how Albon's performing. I thought he's been very aggressive but a little bit hit and miss as well for the month of September. It was a strong result in Russia, where he finished, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, what happened to him at qualifying in Russia that got him disqualified?
Oh, he crashed.
Well, so, okay, right. So he crashed. So where he was disqualified at one of the Grand Prix, so wasn't he? Maybe it was Singapore? Wasn't he? Didn't he have something happen that disqualified him qualifying? His run has been far from straightforward, is my point.
Yeah, no, he's had some... So the interesting thing about Albon, right, is he has actually finished in the top six for all four starts for Red Bull, which is exactly what I said was the bare minimum for a number two in a Red Bull car, right? Which, what's his name? Gasly was not able to do. But his pace relative to Verstappen's is a long way off, just like Gasly's was. I think... The difference is that Albon is able to actually beat the rest of the field, have enough pace to do that. I mean, to come from the pit lane to fifth is impressive.
Absolutely.
I mean, even with the pace cars and some of his overtakes. I mean, a couple of overtakes he did in Spa, he did a wonderful outside maneuver on Ricciardo. And then he overtook, I think it was Perez, on the grass down the Kemmel Street. It was a brilliant move, you know, and that was in his first race for Red Bull. So the guy's seriously got some talent, I think, and whether he's still the right driver for Red Bull for next season is a big question. But he's actually quite impressed me.
Okay, well, that's fair. So I really want to talk about Williams a bit. And again, this is
One comment. So I thought you touched on it a little bit there with the Bottas signing, but what I thought was fascinating about that was that Ocon is going to Renault, right? So Ocon was the man tipped to replace Bottas at Mercedes. He signed a 2-year deal at Renault, and yet Bottas only signed a 1-year extension at Mercedes. So Mercedes could just be doing this drip feed, we'll give you 1 year after another, assuming you perform well enough. But there was some theory that maybe Mercedes were leaving the door open for another one of their drivers, which is Russell, to be promoted.
Yeah, well, Russell, I think, has proven himself quite well.
Yeah, so that I thought was quite interesting. And then I feel really bad for Hülkenberg, and I really hope he finds a seat somewhere, because I like the Hulkster. He's always been pretty quick. He's not doing badly against Ricciardo, honestly. They're on the same number of points. The pace has been there or thereabouts. I think Ricciardo's probably outperformed him a little bit, but not by miles. It doesn't seem to me like he deserves to be dumped out of Formula One just at this point in his career.
Well, yeah, just as you said, at the point they're even, Steven, when it comes to points. They each have 34 in the championship thus far. Yeah, I completely agree with you, and there was some rumors going on that Hülkenberg was going to replace Grosjean at Haas, but Haas has since confirmed both of their drivers are coming back for next year. So that's out. Yeah, I like Hülkenberg a lot, and there were reports that it was not his on-track performance that was the reason he was ousted. There were reports that apparently he had a bad attitude about the car or something. How much truth there is to that, I have no idea, but I'm definitely with you. I'm disappointed that Hülkenberg was kind of nudged out, but I don't know where he's going to go because obviously Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull's out, Renault's out, so the absolute top thing I can think of is Racing Point, and obviously Lance Stroll's not going anywhere, so I doubt Sergio's in a really rough spot. And in fact, I think they've guaranteed their lineup for next year already. So. Where does that put him? He's got Williams, and I suppose it's possible Alfa Romeo, but I don't see that working out.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of people who are suggesting he might be a good fit at Red Bull for next year if Albon doesn't work out, because you're not going to promote Gasly back to that seat for next year, are you? Let's be honest.
No.
But if Red Bull really think they've got a car to contest the championship next year, then they need two guys, you know, in the mix. And maybe Hülkenberg could deliver that. But I think we're seeing Albon do enough to deserve time next year. There's still five races to go. He could drop the ball, but I think so far it's gone pretty well. So that seems like a long shot. So it could end back up at Williams, which would be, I think he started his career at Williams, right?
Yes, that's right. Pole position in 2010 in the wet in Brazil, qualifying.
But nobody's really fighting over each other to get in that seat at the moment, are they? Which is where you were going to go next with your...
Yes, you're segueing beautifully. So it was Russia. George Russell had that brake failure and crashed as a result. It was... I forget which one. One locked up, one was... So it was one of the front brakes failed. So he had that issue. He was out of the Grand Prix. And then several laps later, Kubica was out of the Grand Prix as well because they were nervous about having a bigger parts bill than they could afford or something. It was really bad because Kubica said it was the worst weekend of his career, and I don't mean my driving performance.
It looked like Williams were going to turn a corner, didn't it, halfway through the season. They seemed to be making some headway, getting closer to the midfield. Kubica scored a point look like things are on the up, but they seem to have gone back into their earlier season performance since the break. Maybe that's a little harsh. Maybe they are still a little bit closer, because I know Russell's been up in 15th, 16th place on the grid, but that's probably due to penalties a couple of times. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty desperate if you don't have enough spares to be confident to run the race, you know, in its entirety. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, exactly right. And this comes off the heels that Robert Kubica announced that this was going to be his last season with Williams, that he's going to step aside. And I think it was kind of just being honest. It's like he's not performing to the level where he should be.
Yeah, I mean, that can't have been an easy decision for him. I do think it's the right one. You kind of wonder whether, I know he brought some money to Williams for this season, whether his backers said, well, you know, we gave you a shot. It's not really worked out, so probably time to move on. So he may not be able to bring money for next season. But, I mean, it was a tremendous achievement to get back into a race seat in Formula One after everything he's had to deal with.
Exactly right.
It's a shame it didn't work out better for him. With having such a terrible car. Because, you know, if it had been even in a decent midfield car, he could have maybe gone to the top 10 on a more frequent basis. So not a glorious end to his career. Too bad, really. I think it'd be more like Michael Schumacher, being more known for his first round of Formula One than the second.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. In fact, you know, it was an episode a while ago of Beyond the Grid where Kubica was on. I'm now backlogging. I'm slowly but surely making my way through all those.
Yeah, and some good ones, aren't they?
Oh, definitely so. And Kubica, I mean, he had a Ferrari seat at one point.
Yeah.
Coming his way. So,
well, he could have been a top driver. I mean, yeah. That rally crash just ruined his career, didn't it, unfortunately?
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, it is what it is. And I'm pretty sure that the Ferrari contract would have included, hey, no more rallying, you know. So the irony is awfully steep and multifaceted. So it's a shame, but like you said, it's an extremely valiant effort. The fact that he got back into the race seat is an achievement of its own, and certainly one to be aware. So unlike Schumacher, who was just kind of like, yeah, hey, let's do it again, Kubica really had to work hard to get himself to a place that people trusted his fitness enough to do it and that people trusted his performance. Let's not forget, he took a year as reserve driver last year. So he really paid his dues all over again to get the race seat. So I think that just deserves a mountain of credit.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, to try and find reasons to be positive about Williams' situation, I noticed they just extended their deal with Mercedes, which means that they plan to be around for a couple of years yet. So,
wow. Yeah. As silver linings go, that's not the strongest, but yeah, fair.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Russell's proving to be a pretty good find. If they can figure out what's caused them so much trouble this year and have a better car for next season and get at least back into the midfield, I think he'll take advantage of it. Because I have to say, I mean, some of the midfield runners haven't impressed me. I mean, Haas have had a torrid season.
Yeah. They looked awfully good at the beginning, and then it just went backwards.
Racing Point have been inconsistent, as have Alfa Romeo. I mean, they all have, really. I mean, McLaren are probably the only midfield team that are showing consistency, and even they have struggled with the unreliability. I mean, do you see poor old Norris when he broke down on the last lap in Spa? And, you know, that's a bit of a smash in the teeth. But they've at least been, performance-wise, pretty consistent, whereas the rest of the teams, with the exception of Williams, are just up and down, all over the place.
What do you think? I think McLaren has proven to be a solid team yet. But again, just like you mentioned earlier, why they're so eager to get back with Mercedes when Renault seems to be on an upward trend. But, you know, I am curious, what do you think of Lando Norris versus Carlos Sainz Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, so how many seasons has Carlos got under his belt? It's 3 or 4, right? He's a pretty he's a pretty good peddler, and he did compare well with Verstappen. And Norris, you know, has been well in there. I think, you know, Carlos has probably, would I say, edge it over the season. But Norris has impressed me. I mean, he's been quick. He's dealt with some reliability issues during the race and still brought the car home. He's been qualifying well. He's been racing, you know, pretty well. He's had some dodgy pit strategies as well. He's sort of come off the wrong end of a couple of dodgy calls by the team, and yet, still seems to be performing well. So I've been impressed. I think Norris is another really promising young driver. I mean, there is a lot of young talent in F1 at the moment, which is bodes well for the future.
Well, strictly by the numbers, Norris is well behind of Carlos Sainz. Sainz has 66 points for the season versus Norris with 35. But the month of September was good to Norris, just as you were saying, especially with qualifying pace. He showed a lot of speed and real performance there. So I thought I was actually quite impressed with that. So
I think he's ahead in the quali count, right? But then there are mitigating circumstances for Carlos, I think. And so it's always a tricky one if you just purely go by the numbers. But I think it's very close between them in qualifying.
So going back, one quick talking point. I did want to point out that next year will be the first year that Williams does not have Patty Lowe as technical director. And I wonder, because let's not forget that the car they're racing is effectively a Patty Lowe car, right? This was going to be the year that proved Patty Lowe as technical director, and obviously things went quite sideways there, right? So I'm quite curious to see how Williams shows in 2020 with the non-Patty Lowe car.
Well, but who have they hired to replace him? I mean, have you read of any big name signings? He either in, you know, as a technical director or aerodynamicist? I know they let a few people go, but I haven't heard of too many people going there, which is a worry.
Yes.
You know, it's not going to get any better unless you have some new talent with fresh ideas coming into the team.
Yeah, and just as a quick, I mean, we're talking about ninth place is Haas Ferrari. They have 28 points so far this season. Williams still has the one.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of, yeah. So I am curious. I'd love to hear, of these four Grand Prix, do you have a highlight from the month of September that really stood out for you?
Well, funny enough, the highlight for me is probably Albon's race in Belgium. I mean, I was very worried for him because the first half of that race, he didn't go anywhere very quickly and he seemed to be struggling to make it up through the order. And then, you know, once he got onto the softs in the second half of the race, you know, he really came alive and was very busy making a lot of passes and then culminated in those two fantastic moves. That was probably up there. And, you know, I was pleased for Charles. I mean, especially as, you know, Charles and Hubert were close friends, and for him to win a race after seeing his friend lose his life. I mean,
Yeah.
It's hard to call that a highlight, but it's one of those things where motor racing has a funny habit of working in that way. I mean, that was a horror shunt. Did you see that crash?
Cause, I saw little bits of it. Yeah, I didn't. I just couldn't really bear to dig into it.
Yeah, because the guy who hit him, Carrera, I think his name is. He's a US driver. He's still in a critical condition. He was in an induced coma for a number of weeks.
Yeah, that's the last thing I read about him was that he was still in it. I mean, that was a couple of weeks ago now.
I think they brought him out, but he needs now emergency leg surgery because they weren't able to work on his legs while, you know, he was in such bad shape. So yeah, he's not, you know, sad situation for both of them.
And it just goes to show. I mean, you know, you can add canopies, you can add tethers, you can add Hans devices, you can have all these other safe devices to the car. You can make all these rules with the track, paved runoff areas, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But fundamentally, and this is an engineering moment for you and I, Chris, you just have a whole lot of energy to deal with. And when you have that much kinetic energy, when you have big energy that can sometimes be transferred awfully quickly, then you're just going to have big decelerations, and you're going to have energy that somehow, one way or the other, the driver is going to have to absorb. It's inherently dangerous. That's just the fact of the matter.
Well, you know, the problem comes back to the circuit layout, doesn't it? Because you go through a rouge, you come up to the top of the hill, you take that left hander onto the kennel straight, and there's no runoff there. So he basically he went to avoid someone else's crash, right? Lost it, went into the barriers, and bounced back, and then got hit. So if there'd been more runoff and he'd been off the circuit, he would have been all right. But there's just no, there's just only a few feet of tarmac and then a tire wall. And, you know, that's an area where you're going over that hill blind, right? So there's very little warning. It's the nature of the track, unfortunately. But I don't think anyone's suggesting that we get rid of Spar anytime soon. But
yeah, that's just it. I mean, but think about the crash. The last fatality before that was Jules Bianchi. Completely different crash. And, you know, whether these canopies or whatever they're called, the halo device, if that specific halo device would have saved Bianchi or not, I think that's a question. It was a frickin' heavy piece of machine. It was a front end loader. This is not carbon on carbon here. So there's just, in racing, there's a lot of energy. And just, to me, you're absolutely right that the track, and especially Eau Rouge and the runoff area played a major, major role in what it is. But think of all the different scenarios where different tracks, I mean, because where are we going next? Japan. Spa is far from the safest track on the calendar.
But it's also one of the best on the calendar, right?
So, and what's the other one that's one of the best? Spa.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of a weird, tricky business. I'm 100% with you. It was a huge, tragic loss to lose a promising F2 driver like that. But, you know, I have a really hard time with what to do about it other than mourn.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been huge progress made in racing safety. You know, we still unfortunately keep losing drivers now and again, but there are plenty of other sports where it's a risky business, and that's not, you know, it's the case in other sports, in other things people want to do in their lives, right? Nothing can be made completely safe. Even if you wrap yourself up in cotton wool and never leave the house, right? There's still a chance you could be snuffed out one way or another. So,
well, and you and I were both. This is completely random and off the shelf, but there's some kind of mosquito-borne virus that's proving really bad, and it was reported in our fair county, Mr. Roche. So
was it?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that one. Great.
Yep. Yep. So, in other good news. But
we can't end the pod on that note.
No, so no. We're definitely not going to. I haven't even touched on IndyCar yet. But I did. I just want to say that that was actually my moment of September to see Leclerc win at Monza, just to see the absolute deep and fervent energy from the Tifosi and the Italians, seeing their beloved Italian team win after what has it been, like 15 years or something?
Yeah, it's a hell of a fallow period in Monza, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it was Alonso in 10, so 10 years. Either way, it was just such an amazing to see all that energy and to see Leclerc. And Leclerc was so excited that he asked, and Martin Brundle said, sure, if he could respond in Italian to the first question, and he did, and the crowd went crazy. You know, so that was just a super cool moment to see that. And that was, in a lot of ways, in what's the F2 driver's name again?
Hubert.
Hubert. He, in many ways, did that in Hubert's honor, and he's had a sticker honoring Hubert on his car since. And so to see that, it was a great moment.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah. So I did want to quickly, so we have five more Grand Prix ahead of us. Japan, Mexico, United States, Brazil, and Abu Dhabi. And just did a little bit of quick math here. if you include the fastest laps of the Friday, there's 44 points available to the teams times five. So at the moment, 220 points available to the teams and 130 points available to the drivers. Right now, Mercedes is 162 points ahead of Ferrari. They're looking pretty darn good because after Japan, there's 176 points available to them. If they net 14 points in Japan, which they very well could do, they could conceivably win the Constructors' Championship in Mexico.
Yeah, and it's an amazing achievement, and that will equal the record Ferrari set during the pomp of the Schumacher era, Ross yeah. Brawn and all those guys. It's an amazing achievement, really.
So here's the fascinating thing about the Drivers' Championship. 130 points available there. After Japan, there will be 104. Currently, Vettel has a 73-point advantage over Bottas, but the Mercedes drivers, you know, if you just kind of give Hamilton, he's going to get the nod at Mercedes. Hamilton has 107 points ahead of the top non-Mercedes driver.
It looks like a great battle for third, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes. Exactly right. I mean, you know, so you currently, Leclerc has Verstappen by 3 points. And then obviously Vettel is still going to be in the mix to a certain extent, one way or the other. So it's really fascinating, but it looks very, very good for Mercedes and very, very, very good for Hamilton. Because let's say Hamilton gets 0 points the next three rounds and Bottas wins all three. Then maybe there'll be a conversation. But, right. You know, even then, I still find it unlikely because Hamilton would be supercharged up to crush it in Brazil and Abu Dhabi. So, you know, I chances are looking quite, quite good for a sixth championship for Hamilton.
Yeah, I mean, Bottas has usually been very strong in Russia. I don't think he'd ever been outqualified by a teammate in Russia. And Hamilton had him very comfortably in both qualifying and the race. So I think Bottas is happy with his two wins. And I think they both had four poles this year. So, you know, it's been a good effort by Bottas this season. But, yeah, not enough to get him really in the championship hunt.
Yeah, totally agree. So that's going to be it for Formula One for now. And if you think about it, four Grand Prix in under an hour, that's pretty damn efficient by you and me. So well done to us. That's a pat on the back as far as I'm concerned. I did, of course, want to talk about IndyCar. IndyCar's finale happened a couple weeks back, less than 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago at Laguna Seca. It was their finale. It was a great race. It always is. IndyCar has been providing fantastic racing. And it was Joseph Newgarden, a Penske driver, who took the championship. It's his second championship of his career. And he drove really well. So a big congratulations to Joseph Newgarden. He was definitely one of those guys. He and Rossi, I mean, they comfortably have F1 talent. They just did not get F1 opportunity. But, you know, certainly, and I think Rossi, especially, who was given an opportunity to get into F1 again and turn it down, he's quite happy with IndyCar. But
really? Who was he given a chance with?
Boy, I think it was...
Haas again?
Yeah, it was Haas, or maybe it was... I don't remember. I just remember he was given the opportunity and he turned it down. It was not, obviously, one of the top teams. But it was, you know, it was an entry point type of thing. And he said, absolutely not. He was very comfortable with IndyCar. And in fact, he's decided to stick with, so he's extended his contract with Andretti Racing. You know, there were effectively, Penske offered him a drive and he turned it down. He's staying with the Andretti Racing. So that's, he seems to be quite happy with where he is. But both Newgarden and Rossi, Obviously I'm biased, but in my opinion, they should definitely be in Formula One. But I'm happy for IndyCar that they have such a nice, strong field, and the cars are providing such great racing. So quite happy with that. And they are going to get a power bump in a couple years' time. And in addition to that, they're taking a different approach to Formula One when it comes to passing. So they have push to pass. And their upgraded engines are actually being delayed by a year to 2022. But when they get the upgraded engines, they're also going to get upgraded push to pass. So they're going to get 900 horsepower fundamentally all the time. And then a hybrid system that is for push to pass only. And it'll be, I think that they're talking about a 200 horsepower bump in power for push to pass. And it'll be from the hybrid system. So they're going to be able to get 1,100 horsepower in short spurts. And I think that'll be pretty damn fantastic. And I just swore twice because I'm talking about IndyCar and I'm all excited.
So I got a question for you. You may or may not have been aware of this, but Formula One came to Chicago earlier this year and they put on like a whole weekend of celebration of all things Formula One. And they're doing it again. They're going to LA.
Yep, yep.
And so Liberty Media are clearly trying to raise the profile of Formula One in the US. But surely they just need to get a US driver in a top car. I mean, that's what's going to make the most significant progress.
Right.
And it amazes me. They're not really, not that I'm aware of, and there doesn't seem to be any real news that they're making any sort of behind-the-scenes effort to make that happen. And as you said, there are drivers that are probably good enough to be competitive, especially if they get the chance to get into, you know, proper pre-season, proper preparation. They do it properly. They move to Europe, probably the UK. And
right, basically don't do what Michael Andretti did.
Andretti did, right, exactly. Yeah. Just everything reverse of what he did, and he got a shot.
To be fair, his teammate was Senna, just to be fair. But,
yeah, I agree. But he could have done a lot better than he did. And
I totally agree.
Part of the issue was that people thought he just didn't put everything into it, right? He just gave them that impression. I mean, that's part of the battle is to... If you're behind or struggling, but you're giving it everything, then you're more likely to get more time. Whereas if it looks like you don't really care, it's going to push you out, aren't they?
Right. Right. And you know, Michael had the talent to be in Formula One. He just like you're describing, he did not have the motivation. But c'est la vie. It is what it is. And, I saw that they're going to Los Angeles. They're going to Mexico. Then they're going to be in Los Angeles on the 30th of October. And then they head straight to Austin. So it's kind of this, like, North American triangle of sorts that they're hitting. And it'll be cool. I hope that they get a warm reception in Los Angeles. But, yeah, again, I don't think it's going to be any kind of cosmic shift, especially L.A. in many ways, in some ways at least, is kind of sort of the epicenter for climate change folks, and you know, anything that has to do with motor racing, whether that's fair or not, it might get kind of a lukewarm reception.
Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see what transpires.
But anyway, the next race in Formula One is going to be the Japanese Grand Prix, and that's going to be the 13th of October. The next race in IndyCar is going to be in 2020, so we're not going to talk about that. World Endurance Championship is happening this coming weekend. It's going to be the 6 hours of Fuji in Japan. That's October 6th. And this race I'm quite excited about, the IMSA finale. It's called Petit Le Mans. It's a 10-hour race. That's going on October 12th, so the day before the Japanese Grand Prix. And that's happening at Road Atlanta, and I will be there. And I'm looking forward to that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And I want to thank you for listening. Please take a moment to review us on iTunes or on whatever platform you get our podcasts. Maybe you don't have to remember that we haven't recorded for 6 weeks. Please leave comments on the episode of your choice by going to funwithcars.com. As always, I can be reached at feedback@funwithcars.com. Tweet us at fun_with_cars and check out our Facebook page, which, by the way, I do want to point out real quick, I did communicate a few times on the Facebook page. So that is where there has not been 6 weeks of silence. But that's at facebook.com/FWCars. Chris, it actually happened. We did it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Robin.
I'm Robin Warner. Goodbye.